The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel
Talk. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but is there really any guarantee that when you pray to God, he's going to answer the prayer? Well, one of my listeners just sent me that question by email a few days ago, and we are going to get to it later on, but we have a lot of interesting things to discuss today. Obviously, I'll be sharing my opinion of the Biden-Ryan VP debate, alleged debate, I should say. Gives you a hint as to what my take is on it. I also have a challenge to conservatives and libertarians who cannot bring themselves to vote for Mitt Romney because they feel he is not an ideal choice. And then, during the second half of today's program, I'm going to be interviewing a fascinating guest, Craig Avery, who does a radio show in England. Now, why am I doing this? Why am I interviewing a guy from England? So that he'll interview me on his show, of course. Come on, this isn't rocket science. I've always wanted to go to England. This could be the excuse I'm looking for. No, seriously, the real reason I'm interviewing him is because he was highly recommended by my very good friend and publicist, Steve Schneikert. Steve and I met in high school. We were both in the drama department, and we both loved the arts. The arts, as you know, are a part of our theme here on the Bob Siegel Show, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. I always enjoy doing our pop culture edition. Speaking of pop culture, let's blend some drama with some politics. And who better to illustrate my point than the classic comic team of Laurel and Hardy? I will never forget the old Laurel and Hardy movie in which those two lovable buffoons were ordering dessert in a restaurant. Now, remember Stanley, he was the slimmer one, the dopier one. And he asked the waiter, "What kind of ice cream do you have?" And the waiter replied, "We have pistachio or vanilla? Pistachio or vanilla?" Well, with the gleeful, childlike enthusiasm, Stanley said, "I'll take chocolate." Life can be that way at times. Much as we'd like to believe we can have it all, much as we think we're entitled to unlimited choices, the list is not always as big as Ben and Jerry's. Many assume, as Stanley did, that because they like chocolate, the restaurant must offer chocolate. Indeed, we can be in so much denial that we do not even hear what the waiter says. But deep preference will not miraculously turn two flavors into three. While this observation may be obvious while discussing dessert, it hides more easily when strong convictions collide with political reality. Many libertarians and conservatives are standing by Ron Paul and Gary Johnson because they see little difference between Obama and Romney. They are mistaken. Oh, there may be reason to conclude that neither choice is ideal, but anyone who sees no difference at all must have been asleep during that first debate. Be that as it may, former Republican Governor Gary Johnson is running as a third-party candidate, and Ron Paul fans offer a strong write-in campaign as an alternative to the Republican and Democratic nominations. Congressman Paul has not commented on this development one way or the other, but inasmuch as he never endorsed Romney at the GOP convention, we can conclude that the write-in movement does not upset him or keep him up at nights. Most conservatives, while disagreeing with Paul on foreign policy, still admire his domestic viewpoints and honest adherence to our Constitution's original intent. but they're still concerned about Ron Paul votes ruining November's outcome. Now, of course, many modern elections have had third-party choices and writing campaigns which made little more difference to the outcome than a toy poodle attacking a German shepherd. But most of those candidates did not share the popularity of Ron Paul. Even a less popular figure could affect an election this close. A split anti-Obama vote could prove lethal, even if only a sliver is shaven off. Adding Gary Johnson, whose name is already written on the ballot in 47 states, along with Washington, D.C., we might just witness a majority of voters rejecting Obama, yet handing him the election at the same time. Paul and Johnson are painfully aware of this potential outcome. Johnson talks as if the problem is found exclusively in the Ron Paul write-in movement, which he says will effectively be meaningless. I have news for you, Gary. Your own campaign is just as meaningless unless your objective is to keep Barack Obama in office. Ironically, while Paul's supporters vow to write in his name, Paul himself has dropped a hint that he may vote for Johnson. But neither the Libertarian ballot box nor the write-in protest vote will provide a victory to either gentleman. It's high time Paul and Johnson admit that the very Constitution they so passionately defend may not be worth the paper it is printed on if their loitering helps Obama's reelection. Much can happen in 4 years. For proof, look back at the last 4 years. Obama's contempt for our founding document has already been demonstrated with an end run around welfare and immigration laws passed or upheld by the other branches of government. Now, regardless of how one feels about those issues, and good-thinking people have different opinions, regardless of how you feel about those issues, the process itself is chilling. Chilling. Our president stretches the limits of executive order and rules by fiat. Any man willing to do this while running for re-election might just be unstoppable if he is awarded a second term and doesn't have an election to look forward to. Even so, Obama will have an opportunity to appoint additional judges, additional Supreme Court justices, who view the Constitution as a living, breathing document. That's code for making up whatever you want to believe is in the Constitution but isn't really there, but you want to put it in. If Ron Paul and Gary Johnson are truly concerned about our Constitution, there can be only one course of action. Johnson needs to drop out of the race. Paul needs to bury the hatchet with the GOP, regardless of how he feels he was treated at the convention. He must discourage the write-in campaign and publicly announce that he will vote for Romney instead of casting a worthless protest vote for Johnson. Any other decision could be fatal for our nation. A second term of Obama may just end any honest application of the Constitution once and for all. How sad if these champions of the Constitution help to make that happen. The moment of truth has arrived. Are Ron Paul and Gary Johnson concerned about the freedom of our republic or the inflation of their own egos? But these candidates aren't the only ones responsible for soul searching. So are their fans. Disenchanted with both Romney and Obama, many are eager to exhibit their disdain. Okay, now this is understandable. I get that. I'm with you. I sympathize, okay? There's nothing wrong with protests, and people should use their First Amendment freedom to express themselves loudly and clearly. But while doing so, they must also preserve this same First Amendment, or soon we ain't going to be protesting nothing. That can only be done with a reality check. Reality check. In the voting booth, we do not find an endless supply of life-changing choices. Any political system is a flawed system. The opportunity to make our world perfect will not present itself in November. It always sounds so righteous to say, well, I'm not going to just vote for the lesser of two evils, but it's either that or the greater of two evils. Sorry, Stanley, much as you must love chocolate, the choice is pistachio or vanilla. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric. Welcome back to our program. I'm looking forward to my interview with British radio host Craig Avery later on in today's show, but I'll bet many of you were looking forward to last week's debate. Now, much is being made of Joe Biden's laughter, smiles, and constant interrupting during the debate with GOP vice presidential nominee Congressman Paul Ryan. Oh, there was plenty to smile about, you have to understand. Nuclear missiles in the hands of Iran, that can be pretty funny stuff. And when intelligent reports contradict the Obama narrative about four dead Americans in Libya, the conversation becomes downright hysterical. Yes, without a doubt, Biden came across ruder than an eccentric uncle who dominates your dinner table conversation once a year during those obligatory family Thanksgivings. We witnessed an absolute outrage last week, but we must be careful not to quickly dismiss our vice president as a man coming unhinged, as I've heard a lot of people say. Contrary to the conventional wisdom, Biden did not lose control of himself. Let me say that again. Biden did not lose control of himself. Instead, he offered a cold, calculated performance. It worked, even though personal popularity may have been a casualty. Although many were turned off by Biden's gestures and expressions, that alone doesn't hand the trophy to Congressman Ryan. A debate is won or lost on substance. It's not fair to say Biden lost the debate simply because people were irritated by his demeanor. On the other hand, if people were unable to follow Ryan's points due to the distraction of good old Uncle Joe's arrogant smiles and canned laughter, we can certainly call a foul. Bad manners alone may not disqualify an opponent, but when such manners violate debate rules, that is another matter altogether. Unfortunately, the keeper of the rules, ABC News correspondent Martha Raddatz, broke etiquette herself by also interrupting Ryan. It usually happened when Ryan was about to respond to one of Biden's accusations. Before Ryan could defend himself, Raddatz, by an incredible coincidence, decided it was time to move on to a new subject. Whereas Biden's obvious marching orders were to regain the control Obama lost with Romney, Raddatz apparently had an agenda of her own. She decided to take better charge than previous moderator Jim Lehrer. Ironically, when Lehrer lost control, we accidentally witnessed something closer to a real debate. Romney and Obama had plenty of time to speak and respond to each other without being sidetracked by a three-way argument with their moderator. Americans need to see that kind of exchange more often. The candidates alone should be deciding what to question each other about. A moderator is there to make sure both opponents stay within their time frame and not interrupt each other. Raddatz accomplished neither. For that reason, we did not witness a real debate. The evening was not supposed to be about Martha Raddatz. It was not her place to participate in the debate by sparring with the candidates under the guise of asking objective questions, such as, "Well, now we've reached the recruiting goal for Afghan forces. We've degraded al-Qaeda, so tell me, why not leave now? What more can we really accomplish? Is it worth more American lives?" Yeah, that's a real objective, unbiased question. And while Raddatz's own behavior left much to be desired, she was also the enabler for Biden's abuse. A real moderator would not have allowed him to interrupt. Laughing or making other weird gestures while Ryan talked should also have been included in the definition of interrupting. In any event, since Raddatz failed to do her job, Biden fulfilled his role as faithful attack dog. He may have lost in terms of personal favorability, but the very fact that more people are remembering Biden's smirks rather than Ryan points means his mission was accomplished. stealing attention away from Ryan was only part of the strategy. Biden's flamboyant manner and fast-paced draw also deflected his multiple lies. He wasn't worried because he's used to talking off the cuff and living within the moment. It usually works. Oh, sure, the fact-checkers always catch up with him, but most people don't study post-debate commentary. They form an impression during the debate itself, and that is what remains in their minds. If a man expresses himself with passion, he sounds like he knows what he's talking about. Still, for those interested in finding some truth beneath the performance, a whole litany of Biden flaws can be subjected to the microscope. The variety itself is quite stunning, from a willingness to throw our intelligence agency under the bus to a downright lie about taxing only millionaires unless $250,000 a year is the new definition for millionaire. Two of the more subtle moments, though, the ones that people aren't talking about as much in the debate, deserve special attention. All kinds of shows will talk about the other one. I'm going to key in on a few. When asked how his Catholic faith affects public policy, Biden offered the usual drivel about how he personally is against abortion but cannot turn such a conviction to life. Have you ever noticed that everybody in Washington, everybody, Republican, they're all against abortion. Everyone's against abortion. Everyone thinks it's wrong, but everyone wants you to be able to have one. Now, here are Biden's exact words when he was asked about this. My religion defines who I am, and I've been a practicing Catholic my whole life. Now, his grammar is not too good here, but I'm going to read it just as he said it. And has particularly informed my social doctrine. The Catholic social doctrine talks about taking care of those who can't take care of themselves, people who need help. With regard to abortion, I accept my church's position on abortion as what we call, and then it was inaudible, and then he said the word doctrine. He went on, Mr. Biden, to say, life begins at conception in the church's judgment. I accept it in my personal life, but I refuse to impose it on equally devout Christians and Muslims and Jews, and I just refuse to impose that on others, unlike my friend here, the congressman. Okay, now, nobody bothered to ask if obeying Catholic social doctrine about taking care of those who can't take care of themselves through mandatory wealth redistribution or other government policies was also wrong, because the government then, through taxation, is imposing its religious view on others. You see, only the protection of an unborn baby causes government intrusion in the view of our vice president. Can a case be made that unborn babies are also people who can't take care of themselves? Yes. But who stops to notice when Biden is busy sucking all the oxygen out of the room? Another interesting moment took place when Ryan said we could cut tax rates by 20% and still preserve these important preferences for middle-class taxpayers. Biden rebuked the congressman, saying his math didn't add up. It is mathematically possible, Ryan insisted. It's been done before. Biden replied by saying it's never been done before. Ryan stood his ground. It's been done a couple of times, actually. And then, for effect, Biden repeated himself. It's never been done before. Well, when Ryan said it had been done by President Kennedy, Biden decided all of a sudden it might be wise not to argue the point any longer. Instead, he offered a zinger. Oh, now you're Jack Kennedy. It was a clever maneuver. Biden quickly changed the subject by making it look like he was staying on the subject. After all, he included Kennedy in his response. The line was more popular back when Lloyd Benson said it to Dan Quayle, but Biden's objective was still accomplished. He avoided admitting that facts have little to do with his debating skills. Good one, Joe. And those are only small samples from a much larger smorgasbord of lies. The fact checkers probably needed a few cans of Red Bull just to stay awake all night and catalog them all. Every misstatement should be studied, even though the list looks longer than a doctoral dissertation. Remembering only the rudeness itself lets Biden off the hook. He should instead be remembered as a loud, lying, disingenuous blowhard who avoided being nailed only by sabotaging any semblance to an authentic debate and guessing correctly that a liberal moderator would let him get away with it. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. You can always reach me, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel.net. I have several emails here. This is from Mark, who's written us before. I have a question regarding praying. I have been praying lately in this manner. My Lord above, thank you for all that you have done for me. Today, I ask you to help me earn or make $1,000 a week. Is this an acceptable form of prayer? I have asked in the past for his guidance in being successful, but I feel that is too general of a prayer. I always enjoy your opinion. Sincerely, Mark. Well, hi, Mark. Nice to hear from you again. God always invites us to bring our prayers before him. And you may ask for anything you wish. He wouldn't let us pray for anything evil, but anything you desire, and certainly for protection and provision. But there's never a guarantee that the prayer will be answered or answered any way we want or answered as soon as we want. In my case, I see a lot of prayers answered, but sometimes I wish God would answer them sooner, and then I find out that his timing is best because I learned some things. Now, many Christians do talk about Jesus' promise that our prayers will always be answered if we have faith. Well, it's true and it's not true. Jesus did make such a promise, but with an important stipulation that Christians unfortunately leave out. In John 15:7, Jesus says, "If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be given you." You see, the idea is that we are being obedient to God. In that same speech, Jesus went on and talked about how he was going to send the Spirit of God to live in the hearts of any who want help turning from their sins, our selfish natures. When this happens, we find ourselves wanting what God wants for the world and for our friends. The idea is to mostly pray about matters concerning the kingdom of Christ. So the reason God's answering the prayer is because we're praying for the desires he put on our heart. But again, Mark, having said that, God certainly cares about your personal needs, and he invites those kinds of prayers as well. In fact, it says here in Philippians 4:6, the Apostle Paul talking, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God." Now, this is from Brian. He's writing regarding the Washington Times Community's article version of the monologue I gave today regarding Paul and Johnson. He says, "Your article assumes that Paul or Johnson voters would vote for Romney had they no other choice. This is not true, especially for me. I'll vote for who I think deserves the presidency based on logic and who I agree with, not who is the assumed lesser of two evils. I believe neither Obama nor Romney have earned my vote. I'll vote by my beliefs, not by fear. So let me ask you this. If you like the policies of Paul and Johnson, under what protocol are you voting? Belief or fear?" Okay, well, I should qualify. I said I like the domestic policies of Paul and Johnson. Not all of them, but some of them. But their foreign policies are abysmal. I don't like those. "We shouldn't be concerned," they say, "if Ahmadinejad has a nuclear bomb when he threatens to annihilate the state of Israel and claims the Holocaust never happened. And we're not concerned that a joker like that will get the nuclear bomb." But back to how I would vote, always for the lesser of two evils, because again, the alternative is the greater of two evils. Since Obama's foreign policy is every bit as outrageous, I would vote for Paul or Johnson if they were running against Obama, because with them, I at least like a good deal of their domestic policy. That is, I would vote for them if one of them was the only other choice. Now, I'm a Democrat, a conservative Democrat, but a Democrat, so I did not vote in the Republican primary. Had I voted, I would have voted for any of the other candidates ahead of Paul or Johnson. Bachman, Kaine, and Santorum were my first choices. I actually preferred them to Romney. But news flash, the next president will be either Mitt Romney or Barack Obama. You can vote your beliefs and pat yourself on the back, but if it only serves to bring Obama into another 4 years, there really isn't much to congratulate yourself about, is there? My objection to Obama is based upon more than mere belief. His atrocious record is a fact. Does that fact make me fear for the state of our country if Obama gets reelected? Absolutely. Fear is a part of being human. That's why God allows us to feel pain. If I accidentally touch a burner on the stove and feel pain, I will have enough fear to remove my hand. It's the way of life. Without the pain and the subsequent fear, I could burn my hand off. But I want to thank you for your letter, Brian. I do appreciate the fact that you are doing what you think is right. So am I, my friend. So am I. Now, this one is from Skater, and ooh, she really takes me to task. She quotes me when I said, Biden offered his usual drivel about how he personally is against abortion but cannot turn such a conviction into law. She says, drivel? Where do you get off calling that drivel? It is a most profound, conflicting moral situation, and you have the gall to call it drivel. Jesus had a lot to say about laws. Yes, he did, Skater, but when Jesus talked about the law, he was talking about the old covenant, the Old Testament, that he was offering a new covenant with God, a relationship with the Spirit of God. He wasn't saying we should never obey the laws around us. In the same New Testament, the Apostle Paul in Romans chapter 13 tells us that we should obey the governing authorities so long as their laws are just. We need laws for society to survive. So those are not the kinds of laws he's talking about. But anyway, she says his rule is the rule of love. Love meaning mercy, compassion, forgiveness, and understanding. That is the drivel Vice President Biden was referring to. You missed it, honk. For your homework, go back and read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Otherwise, I must give you an F in understanding. Okay. Well, thank you for the Bible lecture, Skater. You obviously know the Bible real, real well. And thanks also for bringing up Jesus. So since you did, I have a question for you. Was it Jesus' opinion that his mother Mary had a right to choose whether or not to carry him to full term and allow him to be delivered? Now, as a matter of fact, you're talking about mercy. I know many people who have had abortions, and I've never treated them in any way but with compassion, mercy, respect, and forgiveness. But the moment we admit there's something to forgive, we're admitting that we agree with the standard. You can't forgive a violation of the standard if you're not agreeing with the standard. But we do have to have laws. Now, if we made it against the law to have an abortion and a woman was arrested for having one and she felt bad about what she did and I run a jury, I don't think I'd want to see her go to jail. But that doesn't mean that we can be a society that just has these rampant laws where people can do whatever they want. I would say that about anybody. As a Christian, I would forgive anybody. Let me ask you a question, Skater. If somebody said, I held up a 7-Eleven, but I feel really bad, and I want to give my life to Jesus Christ, and I want forgiveness, would you forgive them? I think you would. So would I. But does that mean we're going to say, okay, we're not going to make it against the law to hold up 7-Elevens? The laws we have to make and forgiving unique cases when they feel bad for violating the law, those are different things. But I want to thank you. Oh, now this last one's my favorite. Oh, it's my favorite. This guy has me all figured out. Ian says, you're hurting. Now, he's never met me before, but he read one article I wrote. And this was the article about Biden and the debate. He says, you're hurting. I see that now with people who are so driven in their opinions and proclaiming those hurts. People are mad about Biden because he touched on their fears. That's why every time I see an article like this coming from an emotional base, I know it's just fear on your part. Ryan couldn't give specifics because he would reveal his intellect beyond stirring up people's fears. It's all right. Keep proclaiming your opinions, and people will just see your fear and hurt. I know this will really frighten you, but God asked me to write you and say this. No, he didn't, Ian. The things you say about Ryan and the things you say about me are not factual. God's not going to command you to share disinformation. God knows, as a matter of fact, that I'm not hurting. God knows that Biden did not touch on my fears. Biden was a joke, and I thoroughly enjoyed and used humor while I wrote that column. I've done a lot of debating. I know the tricks. It was my joy to expose them. The man is a joke. Now, I think it's sad that he has gullible followers, but I write my column because I enjoy writing. I do my radio show because I enjoy radio. It is a pleasure. I even get a kick out of exposing uninformed opinions like yours. Oh, by the way, God did not tell me to say this to you, because unlike some people, I take responsibility for my own words. Now, if he wants to speak to me, he certainly can, and I will listen. But frankly, I have not yet bothered to ask God about you, because there's nothing you said that provokes any curiosity. Your words were very predictable, my friend. Oh, by the way, Ian, you object to me being driven by opinion. What was your letter about, if not opinion? You like Biden, and you are not voting for Ryan. That's fine. Do whatever you want. But I have a sneaking hunch that my willingness to be opinionated would not have bothered you had my opinion agreed with yours. And by an amazing coincidence, God would not have told you to write me either. Isn't that correct, Ian? Write us again sometime. Ian, don't you love this guy? He knows I'm hurting. He knows that for a fact. It's not a guess. It's a fact. How does he know? Because I disagree with his politics. And clearly, anyone who doesn't see things his way is hurting. Well, I'll tell you about somebody who's not hurting. He's a pretty interesting guy. His name is Craig Avery. He does a radio show in England, and we will be back with British host Craig Avery.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
Program. Craig Avery lives on the Kent coast, an hour from London, and in view of France, just 22 miles away. He originally wrote stories for radio. Tell Me Your Plans is a collection of three shorts on returning to past loves, and Happy Families is another love story, but this focuses on love ripped apart by domestic violence. Craig is also involved in other film work, along with presenting a radio show. His current project is called I'm Damaged Goods. Now, that's a great title. Craig Avery, welcome to our program.
Welcome, Bob. Thank you very much to have me on your program, and hello to all your listeners.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Now, let's start by tell us a little. I want to know about you mostly, but tell us a little bit about your radio show first. I understand it's kind of a combination sports show, music show. You interview musicians and artists, kind of a variety of things there.
That's true. One thing I wanted to ask you, you only have me on your show, so I invite you back.
Well, I was saying that as a joke, but if you wanted to take the
if you wanted to take
the joke seriously, you get no objection from me.
I should
tell you, I have always been fascinated by the British culture, and I'm Jewish, so the first time I went overseas, I went to Israel, but I was tempted to go to England instead. Well, but all of the, I mean, not just English, but the Irish, the Scottish, even some of the ones that don't get along too well. I love love them all.
You're welcome, and we'll fix that for you. I was only putting your leg.
Well, you know, we Americans have been indoctrinated with England because those of us that are Christians, every time we watch a biblical movie, they never want the people in 33 AD to talk like Americans. but on the other hand, if they talked in ancient Hebrew or Greek, we wouldn't understand them. So they always have British accents. You know, Jesus always, oh, Peter, you're going to deny me three times. It's kind of funny. So maybe that's why I love your culture so much, because in all our movies, you know, from Mary Poppins to My Fair Lady, we've just been in. But I love England. So you're already tops in my book. Hardly even know you. But if you're from England, that's a credit right there.
That's a good start. Thank you very much indeed. Now, the radio show I do is a two-hour program. I'm now just doing a Tuesday night program, which goes out 5 o'clock hour. So I've got quite a lot of listeners in America. And all over the world, in fact. And so a shout to any of those who are listening in tonight, because I know some of them are. I've had already somebody from India who's listening in. So,
wow. So now the people in America listen to you on the internet then?
Yeah, they do. Quite a lot. It's particularly California, but I've also got some in New York and along the East Coast and in the middle states as well. So which is great. And that's how I become to know my publicist, Steve Smirka, and Ruben Della Pina is another guy who's listening in now. So they're listening into your program, and they listen to me regularly. So
Well, good.
Yeah, and so my program consists of a two-hour slot now Tuesdays. I was doing 5 hours, 5 nights a week, but now I'm just doing Tuesdays. And in that program, we've got a bit of play on words. At 6:10 our time, we have, instead of a letter from America, we have our sporting letter from America, which so we update on U.S. sports in there. And the rest of the time, I'm playing music or interviewing guests, generally from the world of music, but sometimes we've got sports stars. We had James Treadwell, who's an English cricketer. I don't know what you know about cricket, but he was on there. And also the Olympic boxing coach, Lee Pullen, was one of my guests recently. He was very nervous.
Well, now, why was he nervous?
He, in fact, said to me, he hadn't done much radio.
Oh, okay.
He said to me, I would actually go in, I'd rather go in one of the ring with one of those big Russians.
Well, you know, I can see that. We're all different. I can see somebody being fearless in the ring and then just turning to jello on the radio. Now, how many years have you been doing your radio program?
About 5 years I've been doing the radio.
Okay, and you're enjoying that?
I do. I enjoy meeting lots of people. I find people fascinating.
Okay, well, I know some of your regular listeners are listening, but some of my regular listeners, I want to give them a chance. So, talk really slowly and tell us where on the internet they can go to find your station.
Right. They can go to our station, which on the internet now I'm on a station. This is my third station. I was on Ronnie Marsh FM, and then I was on Looker Radio. But now the station to contact me on is www.channel.co.uk. So it's a bit of a play on words. We're near the English channel, and you've chosen the right channel, hopefully, if you're listening to me.
Okay, now, you've only been doing radio for 5 years, so it sounds like you were doing a lot of writing before that and writing for radio shows?
No, actually, what I've when I left school, I worked in the music industry for a while, booking bands, mainly support acts to some quite big acts.
Oh, okay, so you're like a publicist and a manager, but you're not a musician yourself?
If you heard me sing, apparently yesterday I went with some friends to a winery in Fairfield, I hope I've got that right, in California, had a lovely day. And I did sing on the karaoke, and anyone who witnessed me singing on the karaoke realizes why I present a program and play records rather than...
Well, of course, the advantage of doing it on a winery is you might have sounded good to some of them.
Yeah, hopefully those who've been there all day. The longer they've been there, apparently, the better I sounded.
Okay. Now, do you have a family, Craig?
No, I don't. No.
Okay, so that gives you a lot of time to... And I understand you're here on a book tour right now.
I'm doing a book tour here.
Okay, now what is the book that you're promoting right now?
The book I'm promoting is a paperback. It's three short stories. You mentioned it on the intro. It's called Tell Me Your Plans. And that's three short stories, and that's about returning to past love.
Okay, now I find that interesting because you say there's some people that live in the present and some live in the future. I've always been a person of the past. I love nothing more than going back to my old neighborhoods when I was a kid, elementary school, high school, college. And when I walk around, I feel like I'm reexamining my life in 3D. And of course, between that and then, of course, music is always a great provoker of the memory. A certain song will come on and I'll remember who I was dating and who I loved. And so I'm a little bit intrigued. Tell me about this idea of returning to past loves. I find that a very interesting theme. You know, in America, we have so many canned movies with canned predictable endings, but that sounds very fascinating to me.
They have very different endings. They're free short stories. The whole book is probably take you 2.5 hours to read, to be honest. It's quite a, if you stay with it, I think you can do it, and certainly do it under free. It is free short stories, probably 2 to 5% truth, and the rest of it is fiction. It's I start all my writing has some basis in reality. And here I'm examining, you know, returning to past loves. First one, I can't think I can say it here. I hope she's not listening. Was a girl I was engaged to in England.
somebody were engaged?
Morning,
okay.
So, yeah, but I did clear it with her before because I actually met her. Interestingly, you should say what you said earlier. I'm like, the first girl I was ever in love with was from Paris. And I was in Paris a year ago, and I did exactly what you did. I visited the neighborhood that I was visiting her.
So did you have that quintessential April in Paris romance that people always talk about?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Now, is it really? I've never been to Paris. Is that really true? I've heard that April in Paris, I've always heard there's no other time or place to be. And you would vouch for that.
Right. I would agree with that, yeah. So I did exactly what you said. I was retracing some of those footsteps. I actually ended up in a jazz club about six doors down from where a young lady called Veronique actually lived. So that was quite weird. I think she's long moved, and that was a long while ago. I'm 50 now, so that was.
But now, when you said you got her permission, now I'm assuming you changed her name in the story, still wanted to get her permission because
absolutely. I think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I know a lot of books always say there's no resemblance to anybody. They put that in there legally, but usually there is some resemblance to somebody.
There's a little bit, and I honestly think 2-5% is true. There's nothing more in that. Some of the more, it's not risky. It's definitely not 50 Shades of Grey. It's nothing like that. But the more, the basis is more relationships. It's not the events. If you can give that,
right.
If I make that clear, it's sort of the conditions of a relationship rather than the actual physical or a certain events. Obviously, events are fictitious.
Okay, so she was your fiance. The wedding had been called off.
The first one was, like I say,
did you call it off or did she call it off?
It was one of those things. I was 4 years into that relationship, and I wasn't mature enough, probably.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you got her permission, because if she came after you with a lawsuit, you would feel like you had married her. She'd seem like an ex-wife.
I would have done.
You would have ended up with all the bad parts of marriage, but none of the benefits.
Yeah, okay. This was by Facebook, actually, that I got a message from her and saying, obviously.
We're having a little trouble. Are you on a remote phone? You might want to.
I'm on a normal phone. Is that better? I'll move away.
Yes. I know that with those phones, you have to sometimes sit still a little bit.
Okay.
Even if it's a landline, if it's one of those ones you could walk around.
It is a landline, but it is a wandering one.
Oh, I know. I'm a real pacer when I'm on the phone, but yeah. You sound good right now. Grab onto something and stand still.
Okay. Don't touch this dial.
All right. Okay, so that's interesting. So you're writing, and that was one of them. What were some of the other stories that you reviewed?
Right. Well, the first story is pretty much based on that romance that I was engaged in, very loosely. The second one is probably most fictitious. That's pretty much based on a girl I didn't have a relationship with, or anything. I was making myself sound terrible here. But and the third one was more of a challenge because I wrote Tell Me Your Plans. I didn't really have the confidence to publish it until I, unfortunately, playing cricket one weekend, and a good friend of mine actually had a heart attack while playing cricket. I think the nearest sport to cricket here is probably baseball. And we were actually, you expect a sporting afternoon to be a joyful afternoon. Even if you lose it, it's something you do for pleasure. The last thing you expect is somebody to pass away during that game.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so this was probably a life-turning thing for me. This was 2010 on the bank holiday weekend, our end of August weekend. And obviously I had to go to as skipper of the team, captain of the team, I had to phone his partner. We had paramedics working on the guy for 46 minutes, air ambulance, and he unfortunately didn't survive, and then the mortuary, etc. And I was at the funeral, and a guy came to me and gave me a pint of Guinness and said, "You don't look too well." And I kind of blamed myself because running the side, and the guy was a sports nut, but wasn't the fittest man. But nobody else blamed me. But I used some tend to blame.
Oh, you felt that if you had discouraged him from doing things that were a little beyond his abilities, you might.
That's not logical, but at the time you feel a bit. That way.
Yeah. Well, it's nice of you to feel that way because it shows you're a man of high conscience and caliber. But of course, if I had been with you, I would have said, "Hey, people die, and we never know." I'm sure that was the last thing you really expected to happen.
Yeah. And literally, anyway, I was to cut a long story short. A guy called Craig Taylor, who I didn't know, came over and gave me a Guinness, and we got talking, and I had a couple more Guinnesses at the wake, and. I told him I'd written this thing called Tell Me Your Plans, which is the first of the three stories in the book. And He said, well, send it to me. And I probably wouldn't have had the courage to do so, having two or three pints of Guinness. So I did. And he said, look, this is one of the best things I've seen written. He said, grammar's appalling. We squared that up and said, but, you know, it had been written very rough, you know, without much attention to it. And he said, "You, whatever you do, you promise me you'll finish this." So I finished it, and we corrected it, and, you know, looked over, because it's best to get somebody else to do your work, because you don't always spot errors. Consequently, I then got a phone call from a guy called Glenn Kylis in October of, let's think this is October of 2011. We got round to getting it all done, so it's October 2011. Now, Glenn Kylis, I don't know if your listeners are familiar with a British TV series, Doctor Who.
Oh, of course, of course.
Good, yeah. Good.
And I should say I'm an avid Monty Python fan.
You can't be Monty Python.
And I recently started watching the British version of The Office, because I love the American version. I'm getting a kick out of watching the British version of it.
Well, I've met Ricky Gervais, and I'm going to be having him on my show, one of our
Gosh. He is such a funny guy. That movie he made, what was it called, Ghost Town? That was brilliant movie.
And I thought, when I met Ricky, because I was doing film work and we were shooting a location, and I felt Ricky might sort of treat me like Carl Pilkington or something, an idiot abroad, or be like he was at the Oscars here or something. But he was a gentleman. So we were for Broadstairs, which is a nice town on the Kent coast, shooting different movies. He was doing a series called Derek, one of the new programs that he's doing. So I was helping a friend on a film. So so we met Ricky Gervais in The Office. That was one of the things. So anyway, I'm losing track a little bit here with Monty Python, but with Craig Taylor, he asked me to finish this. We finished it. Glenn Kylis rung me, who did Doctor Who, back on track, and he's also done a lot of work on Shakespeare on BBC TV, and he rung me, which gave me a lot of confidence, and said, look, I think this, because they're written for radio plays originally, he said, I would like to produce this. And I thought, wow, somebody of this caliber, I, you know, just checked you were serious. And he said, yeah, no, I've got a couple of Saturdays. I'm tied up with the new series of Doctor Who pretty much in a week. But if you can get a cast together, we'll record it. So we recorded it and put it out as a radio play.
And this was the same guy who had said he didn't like the way it was written, but he wanted you to finish it?
No, that guy was Craig Taylor, who is an actor.
Oh, okay.
who's in a short of mine called Happy, well, in the trailer called Happy Families, sorry. But the guy was called Glenn Kylis, who works on Doctor Who. He'd seen the script through a mutual friend, and he rung me in, like I'm saying, we recorded that, produced it in October 2011. So that's the story of the first part of Tell Me Your Plans. Just to confuse you, the three parts of Tell Me Your Plans, the first one is called Tell Me Your Plans, the second one is called Meeting Hannah, and the third one is called, I should know all this, it's from The Verge of Innocence, which is the feel-good story of the two. That gives you a hint the other two are a bit darker.
I want to understand. These are three stories, but they're stories that are going to be produced on radio, or will they be published in a book?
They're in the book, and one of them's been done on radio.
So they're in the book, but they're also now. When you these three stories, were you kind of thinking of them as a trilogy because of the theme, or is there an actual character that's the same characters in all three? Or are they three? Are they different characters in every one? I know the women are different, but it's just a theme that unites them together.
Yeah, you're right. First time the theme is returning to past.
Okay, that's very, very interesting. You know that in America that they only make a sequel if the first movie does well, and the sequel's usually a retreaded story. But you've got three. See, I believe there's such a thing as integrity to the arts. You've got three bona fide stories, and even though somebody might read one and then want to read another one. And so that it is like a trilogy, they're not going to find all the same characters, but it's going to be a similar theme. And that means your writing is genuine art and not something that's just trying to sell shampoo to somebody.
Thank you very much indeed. Yeah. So that's the three stories we've used in there. And the link, as you said, first up, that is returning to past loves, all with different endings. All the stories are as they would do in real life if you chose three past relationships, that you would probably find different consequences.
Okay, now it sounds like some of your reason, you know, your emotional reason for exploring this, obviously you're a writer and an artist and you love the art, but you had personal reasons. It sounds like you were learning things by re-examining these, and you've talked about some of what you learned. What are some other things you learned by re-examining these loves of your life and then and making some fiction out of them?
It was quite a weird thing to do because, like you said, you are almost living in the past, which is not something you want to do too often, but you are when you are writing that situation. And sometimes you may find fault with yourself when you're looking at those occasions, think, well, actually, I could have done that better, or maybe I could have been kinder in that situation. So, but I think you've got to come out of that mindset and always be forward-looking.
Now,
learn from the past.
Happy Families is another love story of yours, and you said this one focuses on love ripped apart by domestic violence. What's with that? I'm sure people are very curious about that.
Well, this week we've got a trailer out for this, which we've put out on YouTube. So if anyone wants to Google it, just put YouTube, Happy Families, and my name, or Craig, because also the lead actor in here is called Craig Taylor. So if you put Happy Families, Craig Avery, or Craig Taylor on YouTube, you can watch the trailer, which is about 7 minutes long. This is a lot harder, as is the writing direction I seem to be going in, which is not deliberate. It's just the way it is. And it's a lot darker. So in this situation, we've got a guy who really can't stop himself. He's deeply in love with his wife, his girlfriend, who becomes his wife, but he can't stop from the occasional, the worst thing possible, beating a woman. Well, there's probably other things worse, but that's pretty bloody awful.
Now, if I ask anything too personal, tell me, but it sounds like you're a pretty open guy. Did you know somebody who did domestic violence, or was this one of your own demons that you had to wrestle with?
Not myself, but I grew up in a situation where...
Oh, you grew up in a home where your dad did some domestic violence?
Yeah, I'd say that's true. And how I did with this situation, how I come to this character, and I mean, I must, I never have myself, but I just thought to myself, what was the worst person I could have been?
Mm-hmm.
And make that person human.
Yeah. So,
and that's what became quite hard to do. But I thought, well, actually, and not was a consequence, but subsequently I've had like our English group called the Samaritans, which is a helpline that people would go to who are suicidal, really.
Oh, yeah.
It's a volunteer service that you'll find there. Any cliff top in England, you'll find their number, or any on any bridges. It's people who are at last tether. And they've subsequently contacted me about using it, which I've said they can use it for free, no problem. A byproduct is for me, is if there's a woman in the situation who thinks, look, I've got to get out of here, or a guy thinking, this could be me, and seeks help. Well, if that happens to one person, then it's all worthwhile. But that wasn't the motive for putting it together. That was just a piece of, I dare say, art, if you wish to speak. It certainly was something that I felt. And I also feel the closer perhaps one gets to one's soul in your rising or bearing your soul, the more emotion you can bring to your play or your book.
Well, that must be so fulfilling to be doing the art that you love, but be really helping people. Now, tell us quickly. We only have a couple of minutes left. Your project called I'm Damaged Goods. Tell us a little bit about that.
That's a brand new thing I'm working on, which I'm hoping to have in theatre, which would be a new direction for me. And that literally, again, it's a strong female part, a woman who's lost her parents in a road traffic accident, and then slides into all sorts of things like prostitution and drugs, and then she meets the right guy that thinks that she's beyond loving.
Well, Craig, you are a fascinating guy, and it sounds like you live a fascinating life. I'm so grateful you could join us. I will definitely have you on our program again. I'd like to have you back and take a much longer time with you. Would you come on our program again?
I'd love to, and thank you to you for inviting me on, and have a good evening.
Okay, my friend. Thank you very much, and God bless you. Okay, this is Bob Siegel, and I will be seeing you next week.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.